and today we're going to ask questions about despair. So, just a reminder that I've been passing the clipboards now instead of at the beginning of the offering for the series, because if you do have a question, if you want to write it down on one of the orange sheets of paper at the offering time, you can put it in the basket and then we'll work through some of those questions. So, thinking about despair, so I'm going to make a joke on myself right now. This is totally a problem on the script. I'm going to make a joke on myself. I have despaired all week about how to engage all of you on this question of despair. I've despaired over despair. There's nothing more to be hopeless about despair. So I finally realized something. The way that I can connect most deeply on my own despair, because I have despair in my life, and thinking about how to define it or capture it, understand it, it's hard to capture in words. It's hard to articulate it. So I went out of my head and went into the movies, because I think story helps us to capture what this is like and how you can feel stuck and move through. So I picked out some of my favorite stories about despair. City Slickers. I love this movie about, you know, the guys who are like stuck in midlife, so what do? They go out west and ride horses. Sure. Or the film American Beauty, which is a bit dark and drab, but it's again about being stuck. It's a hard one. Groundhog Day, which is an obvious one, you know, when you feel stuck in that loop of life and you like caught up in those patterns. This is a newer one to me, but I've enjoyed it. It's the film Crazy Stupid Love. It's really funny about all these different love triangles, but it's really about what happens when you're stuck in your own patterns and you're despairing and hopeless, and well, it's a funny comedy. Office Space is one that spoke to me when I was in my younger years. I always think about the guy with the red stapler, if you've ever seen Office Space. It's quite funny, but it's about people who are in their jobs and they feel like they're totally trapped, like this one guy living in a dark basement with a fluorescent light that he's, you know, if you've ever been in that space. As Good as It Gets. I love Jack Nicholson in this film. You know, he is talking about being stuck in his own patterns, and through a series of events does finally become unstuck. My favorite film that talks about this, if you haven't seen it, it's an absolutely beautiful film. It's called Lars and the Real Girl. And this is his real girl doll, which I won't expound upon, but Lars is stuck in his own grief. And it is through a series of events and connection with family and people that he reimagines himself differently. I don't want to give away any more than that, but if you haven't seen it, it's an absolutely lovely film. Do you have a favorite film or story, book, novel, that has helped you kind of capture, that captures this idea for you of being stuck or despair? What are your favorite films or stories?
One of my favorites is A River Runs Through It.
A River Runs Through It.
And the character that Brad Pitt plays is the younger son. Actually, not character, but it's based on a true story. And he's a very talented, imaginative young man that doesn't really like realize his talents, and he's stuck in the habit of gambling.
Stuck in the habit of gambling.
Yeah.
And a river runs through it. Others, it's all other hands, Steve.
Parasite.
Isn't that the one that just won the Academy Award? Oh, so go see it. Oh. Okay. Yeah. Great. Jill.
You Can Count on Me.
You Can Count on Me. Beautiful story. You Can Count on Me. Mark Ruffalo. Great. I saw another name, Rich.
It's a Wonderful Life.
Oh, It's a Wonderful Life. Yes. The classic. Kim and I were talking about that. I've never seen it. I think it's now, that's the third time someone has said to me, you need to see it. I know, I heard a lot. I clearly need to see this film. It's a Wonderful Life. Thank you, Rich.
Bob? A little heavy, but Tolstoy's Resurrection.
Tolstoy's Resurrection. His last novel. Okay. Yes.
The Life of Walter Mitty.
The Life of Walter Mitty. Oh, I remember that movie. That was a good film. Who was it? Who was it that starred in that film? Oh, I can't even
think.
Ben Stiller? Was it?
Yeah.
Was it Ben Stiller?
Yeah.
Oh, great. Other films. Linda. Oh, Tevye, Fiddler on the Roof. That's a perfect example. Yes, Fiddler on the Roof. Any others? Marcy? Cinderella. She was stuck, and she found her way through. Oh, Dave, yeah.
She's stuck.
Mrs. Doubtfire. Yes. That is a perfect example, right? Robin Williams, his character, is it what is he's in despair, right? With the divorce from his wife and losing his kids. I think those are all beautiful examples of what happens when we're in this, I would say despair is like a spiritual crisis. It's this sense that of homelessness or helplessness based on our circumstances. So I think sometimes we're surrounded in our culture by so much success and things, and our daily needs are generally met. And even with our technology and all these new forms of communication, we've lost the sense of connectedness. And so whether we're facing divorce or addiction or family conflict or any of these things, oftentimes, or even if it's just a general lack of meaning or purpose in our lives, we can lose that sense of connectedness, and it can lead people to feel a sense of spiritual despair. Stephen Diamond did an article for Psychology Today defined despair this way. It's interesting, he's a psychiatrist who defined despair in spiritual terms. He says, despair is a profound and existential hopelessness, helplessness, powerlessness, and pessimism about life and the future. Despair is a deep discouragement and loss of faith about one's ability to find meaning, fulfillment, and happiness to create a satisfactory future for oneself. So it's a sense of being out of control. The psychiatrist Viktor Frankl, who faced horrific experiences, is a prisoner in the concentration camp who worked through tremendous despair, defined it as the meaningless suffering in a simplistic and powerful formula. He said that despair equals suffering minus meaning. Despair leads us oftentimes to ask unanswerable questions. And it can come when we face unspeakable tragedy or suffering, or it can happen just slowly as life changes sometimes and we lose our sense of direction. We can get caught in patterns and lose our sense of direction in life. So how do we break free from spiritual despair? So this morning I'd like to next go and talk about happiness in a different way. So Mark Lauerton is the president of Fuller Seminary. He was the director of the Ogilvie preaching workshop and the chair of the preaching department at Fuller Seminary for a number of years. And he said that he has much to learn about hope and happiness from the Church of the South, from the Church of the Majority World, about spirit and community, hope and happiness. So let's watch this video together.
I want to know that the Church of the North has so much to learn from the Church of the South, and so many of those lessons have to do with things that we don't have in abundance. I think right off the top, what the early churches learned from the Church of the South is joy. I think so much happiness that dominates Northern culture is circumstantial. And when the circumstances of the Global South make your circumstances is seldom the source of happiness, then you have to live for something more and live out of something deeper. And I've been very, very profoundly affected by the joy of people whose lives of faith in the Global South have taught me in humility that I really don't understand either happiness or joy at the level that they do. And that's been a very profound lesson. I think right alongside that, of course, is that they have a great deal to teach the North American Church about pain and suffering and about the authenticity of living, trusting God when your circumstances regularly don't meet even your basic needs, let alone much more. And yet again, I live in a subculture in North America where it's not just my basic needs, it's my completely non-essential needs, and if I think somehow those are being met, then I can actually question the problem of God, which is about as distant from the reality of most of the world as possible. And yet, you know, my pathetic myopia, I can even comment on that. And so, friends that are part of the Global South, helping me see a deeper, bigger reality than I would be able to do otherwise. I think the other thing is actually their ability to hold time differently, not just in cultural terms, but their patience with their suffering and with their challenges, their ability to say, well, but in this moment, at this very moment, we can celebrate, even though all around us there's all kinds of, you know, lives strewn with acute need and chronic circumstances. Really right now, there's beloved friendship, there's a simple meal, or there's a basic sense that God's power is at work despite the 101,000 things that are wrong. There's also a great sense that God is right here in the midst of it, and that creates patience, which I think gives them a chance to hold time very differently than I often do in North America. Yet to be in a setting where you feel the joy and the exuberance of a global church, especially in South, where circumstances spell despair, but in actual fact, their response to that is a deep celebration of God's love and the presence of God's power. It's pretty amazing and eye-opening, really, to people like me who have grown up where so many of those things are just basically dependent on circumstances, and for them, their circumstances are the exact opposite.
Learning when I have gone down to the Hearts for Honduras school and immersing ourselves in the culture and life in Honduras, it shows that happiness isn't based on our circumstances, but they teach us that hope and moving through a connection and community helps us to find courage even in the face of despair. So when we place our meaning in objects in this world, whether it be in the success we achieve at work or our worldly possessions or the size of our house or the number of our cars, we can get stuck in these false gods. And I think that often leads us to a false sense of happiness. It's not, and it can often lead to despair. So if we put all of our eggs in the basket of either security or control or affirmation, Richard Rohr talks about in his book, Breathing Underwater, we can get caught in these spiritual patterns that lead us to despair, but there are ways out, and it is through joy, and it's through connection, and it's through community that we can also find our way through. One of my favorite stories is the Book of Ruth in the Bible. And so I'd like to talk about this story because I think it is an example of what despair can look like and how we can move through that hopelessness to find hope once again. So the story of Ruth, it begins and it takes place during the time of the Judges. So this is the time in Israel's history before they're united under a king, King David. So this is before that time, and the time that the story is set, there is this famine that happens in the land of Israel. And I am always struck by this because I know that the famine must be intense because Elimelech, and his wife, Naomi, travel from Israel to Moab, which at this time, Moab and Israel are not friends. They are often at war with each other, but the famine is less severe in Moab. So they journey there for hope, and they live there for many years, and they go there with their two sons, and then Elimelech dies. And Naomi is widowed, and she's left with her two sons. And then the two sons marry Moabite women. But then her sons die. So they're married, but then the sons die. So now there are these three women, Naomi, Orpah, and Ruth, her daughters-in-law, and they're left without husbands. Ancient Israel is a patriarchal society. So these women were completely dependent upon men as a source of their economic sustenance and survival. So here are these three women who are left without family resources or means to figure out how they're going to live. Then Naomi learns that there's food in Bethlehem, where her family of origin is still from. So she determines that in order for these three women to survive, that she must return to her homeland, so that they can make their way through their despair. So let's read from the book of Ruth together. This is from the first chapter, starting the first thing. After a short while on the road, Naomi told her two daughters-in-law, "Go back, go home and live with your mothers, and may God treat you as graciously as you have treated your deceased husbands and me. May God give each of you a new home and a new husband." She kissed them, and they cried openly. They said, "No, we're going on with you to your people." But Naomi was crying, "Go back, my dear daughters. Why would you come with me? Do you suppose I still have sons in my womb who can become your future husbands? Go back, dear daughters. On your way, please. I'm too old to get a husband. Why, even if I said, there's still hope. This very night, not a man and had sons. Can you imagine being satisfied to wait until they were grown? Would you wait that long to get married again? No, dear daughters. This is a bitter pill for me to swallow. More bitter for me than for you. God has dealt me a hard blow. Again, he cried openly. Orpah kissed her mother-in-law. So Naomi travels with her two daughters, and she releases them from their obligations to her, and she encourages them to return to their families, to their mothers, go back to their mothers' houses. You see, when women return to their families, it's security for them. Their families can provide food and shelter, they can arrange for a new marriage for these younger women, and that would give them security. And Naomi can't provide any of these things. As a woman, she's completely dependent upon the charity of others. Naomi is bitter. You saw the word bitter come up. It keeps coming up over and over and over again. Bitter. She's in the grips of despair. She's completely hopeless in her situation, and she cannot see a way out. It's a physical and spiritual crisis gripped by the loss and grief and lack of resources. And the only way she can perceive any hope for her daughters-in-law is to turn back. She asks them, "Turn back, my daughters. Why will you go with me?" Orpah, whose name in Hebrew literally means the back of the neck, Orpah followed the social conventions, and she did what was expected of her. So she literally turns back her back on Naomi, and she kisses her mother-in-law goodbye, and she is weeping as they part. I would argue that Orpah, in this moment, so many times I think she's viewed negatively for leaving Naomi's side, but I think in her turning back, it was her way out of despair. It was her ability to reconnect with her community, and she saw hope in a new life. So let's read the rest of the story. But Ruth embraced her and come along. Naomi said, "Look, your sister-in-law is going back home to live with her own people and gods. Go with her." But Ruth said, don't force me to leave you. Don't make me go home. Where you go, I go. And where you live, I live. Your people are my people. Your God is my God. Where you die, I'll die. And that's where I'll be buried. So help me, God. Not even death itself is going to come between us. And when Naomi saw that Ruth had her heart set on going with her, she gave in. Ruth refuses to listen to her mother-in-law. She is quite indignant. And she takes a huge risk in order to ensure the survival of both of the women. She chooses to ignore all the expectations of the community and family, and she was neither legally or customarily bound to remain with her mother-in-law. And she refuses to do what she's told to do. I love that about her. She refuses. She decides in that moment she is going to do an act of chesed. This is a Hebrew word, a kind of love that includes loyalty and love and compassion for another person. It is a deep love that refuses to be hopeless in the face of despair. And Ruth is indignant by resisting what is normal family expectations. And she shows this love and loyalty to Naomi even in the midst of a personal crisis. So this is Ruth's moment of moving out of despair. When she is able to walk with Naomi, when she is able to help her, and when she is able to restore her own ability to love, she restores her own self-worth, and she sees her purpose in life. But what's interesting is Naomi is still stuck. After Ruth decides she's going to continue on this journey, they make their way to Bethlehem, and the first thing Naomi says to her people is, call me bitter. She is still in the midst of her despair. She won't let anyone help her. She is still bitter about her circumstances. What is interesting is that Naomi's transformation doesn't begin to happen until the next chapter of the story, when Naomi reaches out to someone. Until that moment, Kushner reflects this in his book. Until that moment, Naomi believed that all the bad things that were happening to her were happening because she had deserved them. But once she reaches out to someone else, she is able to see that her act of thoughtfulness can bring her to see herself as someone with self-worth. It gives her meaning and purpose for her life. So Rabbi Kushner writes, the best cure for feeling down on your own life is to reach out and help someone else. The best prescription for adding joy to your own life is to share your life with others. Breaking free from despair is less about people helping you, and it's more about your connecting in service, in love, and in compassion with others. Oftentimes, when you're in the midst of despair, it's hard to see that. But there are ways that you can help. It's not about picking yourself up by your own bootstraps. That's not it at all. I don't want to give a misconception here. But what it is it's about finding that courage or that spirit within yourself that can connect with the spirit and energy of another person so that you can find that strength within you to move out of despair. So I think that there are three ways that can help us spiritually in our own spirit journeys in helping us to move from despair to hope. First is about just opening our hearts and our lives. And again, that's hard. It's also counterintuitive. Oftentimes, when we're in the midst of despair, we build bigger walls instead of knocking them down. But when we're able to open our lives and let others in, and we can serve others with love and compassion, it helps us to see the interconnectedness of us all. Another piece is about connecting. opening your heart to people in need, is when we connect with one another, it helps us move beyond a preoccupation with self. You know, like Mark Latimer was talking about, that myopic worldview. We have a tendency to only see things from our own point of view. But when we can connect with others, we can see the bigger picture. We can see the more. We can see God at work. We can see all of the gifts of God to both be able to be known and to know others. And then the third piece is wonder, which Will talked about with the kids today, thinking about nature. Or if you've ever had a moment of awe or wonder, connecting with another person. Wonder, I think, helps to open us up to the beauty in the world. The wonder of our human bodies. The awe of a moment. The inspiration of beauty all around you. The gift of wonder helps us to connect with that something that is larger than ourselves. And wonder can change us and inspire us in connecting with God and one another. Like if you've ever, like if you ever are facing despair, I would always say, go find a small child. And they are the best teachers of wonder. But they can find a small little ant and you just follow it. Wonder about how that ant is made, or to see something big by going for a hike in the woods. Just go with a little kid, and they will just open up your spirit to seeing hope all around you. So I think it is these three things which can help us move out of despair into hope. It's about opening our hearts, connecting our lives, and recognizing beauty and wonder all around us to move us toward hope, overcoming our despair, and connecting us with love. Love for God, love for others, love for self, and love for the world. Amen. Amen.